Welcome to MetaStrategy's Forum on World-Class IT, a weekly conversation with people who are shaping the technology landscape. I'm Peter High, and I'm pleased to welcome Bill Rue to the broadcast. Bill is the Chief Executive Officer of GE Digital, as well as the Senior Vice President and Chief Digital Officer of General Electric, a 126-year-old industrial conglomerate with revenues in excess of $120 billion annually. At GE, Bill has been responsible for leading a massive digital transformation by bringing in new employees, reprogramming the existing employees, and bringing in chief digital officers from the outside. Before joining GE, Bill served as the vice president of Cisco, and prior to that, was the senior vice president at Software AG. Bill received both his Bachelor of Science and Master of Science degrees in computer science from California State University, Fullerton. He also serves on the board of directors of Magna International. I recently caught up with Bill by phone from his office in the San Francisco Bay Area, and our conversation covered World-Class IT Principle 1, people, as Bill discussed the importance of blending new talent with existing employees so both sides can learn. Principle 2, infrastructure, as Bill discussed how digital and new technology is impacting business models in all sectors, especially the industrial one. Principle 3, project and portfolio management, as Bill discussed the different steps of GE's digital transformation. And Principle 5, external partnerships, as he discussed GE's value proposition when selling customers digital capabilities. We also discussed the difficulties of digital transformation and the soft skills required to make that change, the different segments GE has created for digital, the importance of the Chief Digital Officer at GE, and a variety of other topics. If you like what you hear, we'd be grateful if you give us a rating on iTunes or through whatever other source you use for podcasts. Thank you. The Forum on World-Class IT is brought to you by TopTal. TopTal helps organizations achieve the world-class skill, execution speed, and agility they need to win in an environment of increasing innovation and competition, especially in the realm of talent. Blockchain is a topic of increasing relevance to companies, and chief information officers need to develop a talent pipeline to help implement a blockchain strategy. I recently caught up with TopTal's CEO, Tasso Duval, who offered his top five thoughts on obtaining blockchain talent.
First, when hiring blockchain talent, don't focus too much on specific experience, especially since the tools of the trade are changing rapidly. Instead, hire people with a strong baseline knowledge of development and who have experience with cryptography or distributed systems. Second, look for developers who are enthusiastic about the technology. That enthusiasm will provide motivation for them to stay up to date on best practices and innovations in technology. Third, focus on quality of previous development work and attention to detail. Faulty development work can cost a lot in the long term, especially with blockchain implementations. Fourth, ensure you're peer reviewing the talent that comes into the network or that comes into your organization through other experts so that you're ensuring their blockchain knowledge is up to speed with your expectations. And fifth, ensure that when you're providing a management framework for the developer to work within, it's one that considers blockchain at its core, ensuring that the developer is not only working with best software practices, but also best blockchain practices is very important.
The Forum on World-Class IT is also brought to you by Transmit Security. Transmit Security designs and develops platforms that address problems in security and usability by making it easy for developers to implement advanced authentication techniques, ranging from biometrics to behavioral profiling. As the risk of cyber attacks and hacks increase, companies need a more effective way of preventing unauthorized access. I recently caught up with the Transmit Security CEO, Mickey Budai. This week, Mickey shares how abstraction layers can make companies more agile by avoiding vendor lock-in and ongoing integration work.
The second one I call abstraction. There are a lot of cool technologies in the market today, and the rate of innovation is like we've never seen before. Large enterprises are adding more and more technologies and keep growing the stack of technologies they need to manage. Now, there are a couple of challenges here that need to be addressed. As the market keeps evolving in an accelerated rate, the cool technologies of today may not be that cool 5 years from now. Some of them may not be even cool by the time you end up integrating them. Now, depending on the way you integrate these technologies, it may be hard and even close to impossible to get rid of them in the future. I'm seeing customers of mine who are really eager to get rid of technologies they have adopted years ago. But even technologies they have adopted just 2 or 3 years ago, they just can't do it. It's too complicated. They are integrated deep into the stack, and used by many different processes with a lot of proprietary code that manages these technologies. The result is a stack of technologies that keep on growing and eventually is very old and patchy. This is very obvious in the identity space, authentication, fraud prevention, customer onboarding, but it's also true for other categories as well. This is where abstraction platforms become really useful. When you have a lot of technologies to integrate and you're just not sure for how long you're going to use each technology, look for an abstraction platform. Instead of integrating these technologies into your systems, they're plugged into an abstraction layer and your systems use open standard APIs to that layer. You then achieve a few goals at once. First, there is no vendor locking, as you can switch between technologies that are plugged into the abstraction platform without any impact on your systems. This by itself is a huge value. Secondly, as the abstraction layer uses open APIs to connect to your systems, you can replace the abstraction layer altogether with another vendor that supports the same APIs. And thirdly, there is no ongoing integration work of each new technology to your systems. So your time to market is very fast and your cost of integration is very low.
Tune in next week for Mickey's advice on developing a network of advisors. Bill Rue, welcome to the Forum on World Class IT.
Hey, thanks. Thanks, Peter. I really appreciate it.
No, it's a pleasure to speak with you today. Bill, I wonder if you could talk a little bit about the digital transformation that you lead at General Electric. You're multiple years into this. You've been in role for a few years as well. And as most organizations of a certain size, they don't need to be the behemoths that GE is, even ones that are order of magnitude or two smaller than yours. Digital transformation is tough work, and it's often a multi-year journey. In fact, it almost always is a multi-year journey. Can you talk a bit about where you have been and where you're going, where you are sort of in that journey at present?
Yeah, I think when we started this 7 years ago, GE was an early mover into this space, and it really drove into it because it could see that its customers were starting to use the data off the machines that GE had. And I think there was a recognition that you had to be the best at understanding your machine going forward. You don't want someone else to do this. And we enter a world where selling the machine is one piece, but anybody can take the information off the machine and start to give insight. And you want to give the best insight to your customers. So it was a very simple thought process in the beginning, but it turns out it was pretty profound. I think that what we've learned over that period of time is a couple of things. One is, from an outside perspective, you know, we've come to believe that the world is a series of dominoes. The business world is a series of dominoes. And every industry sector is eventually going to fall to digital being the cornerstone of what you have to be good at to provide value. And we've seen that in retail, and we've seen that in entertainment, telecommunications, and so on. We're now, I'd say, seeing it in the industrial sector. And what we see, probably one of the first ones we think is going to fall in a big way, is probably automotive. And that's going to be software for autonomous driving, is going to foundationally remake who buys cars, who sells cars, what's the business model going forward. But I think that we believe that's true of every industry that we serve. Eventually, digital is going to be at the center point of it, and autonomous systems is going to be not just for cars, it's going to be for power plants, it's going to be for rail yards, it's going to be for factories. And so we're entering a 10-year period where the industrial sector is probably going to be the most interesting sector for digital. And GE took that first move, incubated it, and we feel really, really well positioned to be able to win both in the industries we serve, as well as provide new kinds of tools into this emerging world.
And GE obviously is a very diverse organization. And I'm curious about digital as a theme and the various topics that are associated with it being sort of glue across that diverse organization. Can you talk a bit about some of the things that are drawn together, perhaps in ways that they were not before, as a result of some of the processes and technologies that you are using as part of your digital transformation?
Yeah, I think that when we got started, of course, nobody had in the industrial world ever done a digital transformation. And quite honestly, I don't think anybody, big companies and even the consumer sectors always struggled with trying to bring digital in and remake themselves. And it's because it's hard, because the way you do things, is resistant to change. And the second thing is the knowledge about doing digital is very unique, and it's usually not in organizations. And one thing, we learned, it's not IT the way we've traditionally done it. It's something new. And so, the first thing is that I would say is that what I learned especially out of this is that it's not so much the technology change, but the change is in the soft things, the culture, the leadership, and the talent. And if I take them in the reverse order, of course, you want to have, you want to bring in talent from the outside, sort of the digital natives. But if you don't have a strategy to move your own people to become digital migrants, you can never fully embrace it. A good example is if a supply chain leader doesn't understand what digital can do for them, they'll never have an initiative where digital is at the center point of leading. So they have to be a digital migrant to be able to take advantage of that. I think the second is leadership, that when you're going to do this, you're going to invest and you have to rethink your investment, and that takes leadership. You're going to have to do things in a new way. You're going to have to drive new productivity initiatives that are not based on the more traditional Lean and Six Sigma, but also incorporate digital. I think also you've got to make sure your leaders are able to tell the digital story. And I think the last thing is culture. When you think about how software is built, it's very different than the way we build, big machines. In big machines, you write a specification, you figure out the technology, then you build it. With software, you build a little, test a little, pivot, you learn. You're using techniques called agile, and it's a very different style of how you build product, et cetera. So I think that what we've seen is that we've spent a lot of time with every organization in those transformations. And as a result, all of them now have more and more of a capacity to do it on their own rather than having the mothership having to help them. And that's what you want. And if you focus on the technology, you'll never get there. On the technology side, the other thing we've learned is that you have to be into this idea of there's a lot of reusable patterns that exist out there. And the idea of reusing technology and reusing what you build across businesses to go faster is something that you have to be able to do. And again, that falls into culture. So the idea of reuse of technology, which the open source community learned years ago, but companies are really, find it difficult to think that way, has to be brought into the way you go about the technology. It's probably a different answer than you expected, but I think that's one thing I tell every company, that those three things, those soft things, often are the most important things to having a successful digital transformation.
And how much of that required, I appreciate you focusing so much on people topics, and I wonder how much of it requires, you talked about bringing in some more of the digital natives, for example, and you also talked about sort of rethinking things with some of the digital migrants, as you put it, and I wonder, What do you see as the sort of mix between the need for new talent versus reprogramming, so to speak, some of the people who've been with the organization for a while? How do you think about that blend?
Yeah. At GE, over the 7 years, we really remade about 50% of what you would call our digital talent within IT, and adding new digital talent. And then I would say the other 50% is your own people. I would say it's equal. I don't think one dominates more than the other. And I think companies, big companies, make a mistake in one of two directions. You know, they try not to bring anybody in from the outside because they get rejected, and we'll just train the existing people. And that's a very slow road. Or they say, we'll bring in people and we're going to segregate them and keep them away from our existing people, in which case you get no learning on the other side. And that I haven't seen anything that really works when you do that. What we have done is what I think of as the messy bit, which is you're gonna do both simultaneously. You're gonna bring in people from the outside. So we brought in a chief digital officer from the outside for every business. And by the way, finding someone who fits into the culture of the company is a hard thing. At the same time, you know, not everybody who you try to retrain to embed digital, you know, embraces it and gets there. So I think that, you know, there are challenges, but it's the messy bit of bringing it together. And so, you know, I look at in our aviation business, we brought in a great chief digital officer, John Mansfield, and he is very well in tune and aligned and working with the aviation group in building out their digital capabilities. So when you bring it together and you deal with the both sides of that equation, that's how I think an existing successful company will be able to embrace digital.
Mm. And how these CIOs that are now embedded in the various operating companies across the organization, how do they, first of all, would you mind my asking, what is the reporting structure between you and the leaders of those organizations?
Yeah.
And likewise, how do they, as they are developing strategy, how much is taken from the center, your organization, versus of their own organizations as well?
Yeah, and their CDOs, not CIOs, their chief digital officer.
Right.
And they work hand in hand with the CIOs. Mm. And, you know, I would say in the beginning, we created, as we've gone through our evolution here over the 7 years, in the beginning, we actually created a center of excellence that, because the businesses didn't have any of that digital capability, the center of excellence had a core of data scientists, a core of digital developers. And so, and this was really in the first 3 years of our existence. And that center of excellence, what it did was it was a place that they could pull talent and it could be assigned into them. And so that gave us at least some capability to do that. The chief digital officers were brought in. They solid lined into the business. And you have to solid line it into the business because you want it to be part of the business. And then you dotted line it back to the chief digital officer of the company. And then, you know, over time, nature takes a course and you begin to find that these organizations can begin to go off on their own and create things. And so we moved from a center of excellence where we had this core set of people that were needed into we began moving more of the development and the digital operations into the business in the next 2 years. And in the last 2 years, the relationship is changing to where we have at the horizontal or at the core, what we've created is a set of tools that we sell to our businesses at a very attractive rate. And then we sell to our customers and to other industrials. And so the relationship has moved from a source of talent and capability to a structuring the program to being where we have a new business called GE Digital that has a set of industrial tool sets that everyone can use. And then each industrial business is driving their unique digital capabilities and working with with the sister company, GE Digital. And GE Digital is also selling to non-traditional industrial companies on the outside. So we've gone in through this, and because in the end, you don't want this to be a digital thing separate from the business. You need to have it embedded in the business. And being willing to make that shift was something we've always been willing to do. So it's gone through transformation after transformation, which is very hard in many ways on the group that's doing it, because you're always forcing them to say, okay, here's our mission today, here's our mission tomorrow. But it's the only way to move a company through this and have them become digital migrants and digital natives. So in the end, the chief digital officers reported to their CEOs of the business, dotted line to me, and you know, as we go forward, they'll be more and more embedded in those businesses and driving it with those businesses, which is eventually what you want done.
Can you talk a bit about the division between customer-facing digital activities and operational digital activities? You know, as innovative examples are given in the common periodicals about digital transformation and digital value, naturally a lot of those revolve around customer-facing ideas, revenue-augmenting ideas, because of course it's those are the things that are touching customers and are therefore more accessible to us as readers, as consumers. But there are profound implications of digital transformation on internal processes. And I wonder if you can talk a little bit about your perspective on each, and also maybe how you balance each of those, how you even organize to be able to identify opportunities in each category.
You know, this was actually, I think this is one of the best things we did is early on, we segmented this to help everybody understand their role and responsibility. So we had really three programs for digital. We had what was called GE for GE, GE for install-based customers, and GE for the industrial world. Now, the reason we did that is there are different roles and responsibilities, and you're touching on that. Well, first of all, we wanted our internal IT organization working with their business to think about how to apply digital for their own productivity in the company. And you don't need a separate digital group. What you need is your IT group to begin to embrace and adopt these new kinds of technologies. Moving away, you know, they'll still do ERP, but the idea of creating a data lake for every business, so you had access to your data and you treated it like an asset, opening that up for analytics to look for new insights into how to operate your business better. So GE for GE was doing it for yourself inside and showing the world that you could do it. That was so important because essentially when you're going to your customers and saying, I'm going to sell you digital capability, you know, they're like, well, you're an industrial firm. What would you know about digital? Well, we did it for ourselves and now we're doing it for you. And so the second one, the GE for the install-based customers, was about then looking at our existing product lines and saying, where does digital actually help to move forward that relationship with the customer, provide them greater value? And a good example is what our GE Power unit did. You know, for example, they have a very robust portfolio of grid automation and other kinds of products which are digital products that complement their industrial products. And, you know, even within their services, they have remote monitoring and diagnostics that is all about taking data in, doing analytics and providing insights as a part of the service contracts that they sell. And so they are transforming what they sell to customers as well. And then, you know, the third one was creating GE Digital to sell to the industrial world, where we sell beyond our traditional install base the tool sets that are used in GE for GE, that are used in GE for the install base, but we sell it to the broader industrial world, giving GE a new option on creating digital business. So when I show this to any company, this resonates because it's also a roadmap that says, hey, I'll do it for myself and learn, and then I'll do it for my customers and I'll build strong relationship. Then I'll enter new adjacent markets and try to extend my capability. What we've seen fail is companies who say, hey, I'm going to create a whole new digital business and it does something different and it's going to be successful. They don't have enough capability. They don't have enough talent, culture to do that. And so this process lets you work from strength because a big company is not good at speed. It's good at scale. So the scale part is let me learn from myself. Let me learn from my industrial customers, then let me move into adjacencies and continue to build out this industrial business. And every existing firm I've seen do this has been much more successful than any other approach. Does that make sense?
It does make sense. That's very interesting. I like the sequence of that, which resonates quite well. I'm also curious, Bill, different organizations have found different executives to run the digital transformation. Some, for example, have made it an add-on set of responsibilities to a chief information officer or a chief marketing officer. Others, like GE clearly, have created digital functions independent of those or other existing divisions or functional areas of the organization. And I wonder, obviously, we see how GE has voted, but you also work with a number of a great number of companies who, clear, I'm sure, are in different camps in terms of how, you know, who is responsible for this, yeah. Who shepherds this, and whether it's their only set of responsibilities or a portion of the responsibilities. Do you have a single preference, or are there different things you look for that would clue you in as to what sort of a demarcation is appropriate for a firm?
Yeah, you know, we've gone through three foundational transformations and very logical transformations. In the beginning, you know, nobody knew. So we were incubating and strategizing and piloting a lot of stuff. And again, in the first phase, we were very oriented towards GE for GE, doing it inside, learning from ourselves. And I would say the chief digital officer role was a champion, was there to help with education, was a place to have a center of excellence for new kinds of talent that could be applied. But it's not the end game. And I think a lot of people create a chief digital officer and then that's sort of the end game. We then moved into the second phase where the businesses themselves started making these new offerings for their installed base. And that can't be done at the center. That's got to be done in the business. And so we started hiring chief digital officers in each of the businesses to lead the transformation inside the portfolio for each. And then, you know, the final phase is that where we've ended up is every CIO for every business is a digital leader, and they own the GE for GE digital transformation. And every CDO in a business is a digital leader, and they own the portfolio for the customer-facing applications in there. And then, you know, my role has become more of this horizontal set of tools that they all can use and enable themselves with, plus creating a business for the outside world. And I think that this is the way you've got to think about it. There's no one single leader. What you're going to do is you want to build towards having the ability for every IT person to become digital to drive the inside, every CDO to work with the businesses to create portfolios for their install base. And then you probably, if you want to go into adjacent, you need a leader to lead into these new adjacencies. And so we've moved from where we incubated it with a leader and some capability. But over time, you need it to go in the organizations because you need this to be business as usual, not this unique thing. But you can't do that on day one because the culture, leadership, and talent aren't there in the business. And that's the beauty, I think, of what we've done is every one of our businesses has accumulated the leadership and talent. They've done it in the IT organization and their digital organization. The leadership is pushing to and realizes the value of their data and analytics to changing the nature of their own productivity and their business. And then you see them starting to make this a center point of what they do to where their supply chain leaders recognize that digital is the source of how they change what they do going forward, et cetera, to where everybody in the organization thinks of digital as just the way to do things in the same way GE took Six Sigma and made it just the normal way everybody did things. And I think that's what's important is that a company has to realize it's not a person or an org, but a change of the entire organization. But you can't do that in 1 minute. And you can't go compete with a startup who's got speed because you're just not fast. You can only compete on scale, and that's why it's important to do it for yourself first, then do it for your install base, then move into an adjacency, because it's the only logical way for an existing company to get beyond the innovator's dilemma that often is why they fail at these things.
That's a great insight. Yeah. And I'm also curious, as you talked about, you're 7 years into this journey. It is a journey that continues. For those who are earlier, or maybe even haven't begun the journey, what and moreover, I'll also add, you've had a sequence of CEOs who've been steadfast in their communicating that this is the path forward, which obviously is a very important ingredient to this sort of a transformation as well. For, let's say, an IT executive or another executive within an organization who wishes to create the impetus for this kind of a change, what sorts of advice would you offer to him or to her to sell this to the company, sell this to the rest of the executive suite as well as the board, that this change is necessary?
Yeah, I think that one thing that's interesting is that I always say that, you know, 7 years ago, when we talked to customers and other companies, they didn't understand why we were doing it. Then I think at the C-suite and the board, there became a recognition about 3 years ago, and they would ask us what we're doing. And I think now they're asking us how. So I believe the time is now, because I think that there's a general acceptance that the future is going to be on the ability to use digital to drive greater productivity, efficiency, and your relationship with your end customer. But the way I always, focus is when we go into customers now and we talk about, selling them our digital portfolio, it really always starts with outcomes. And I think that this is such a simple idea, but it's rarely followed for whatever reason out of the IT community, which is look, if you're going to really foundationally, get an outcome to your business, I want to use less fuel to run my business because, fuel is a key cost. Or I want to get rid of unscheduled downtime in my factories. Or, I want to improve the time that it takes to deliver, a set of goods from one place to another. Any of those, what you have to do is to get to what are the core outcomes that drive a business. So, if you own a wind farm, you want to generate more electricity off the same wind because you have no control over the wind. If you're in a power plant, you want to reduce your fuel burn, reduce your unplanned downtime, and increase your efficiency. If you're selling heavy industrial equipment, tractors and other things, you want to improve your services so that you have less truck rolls to deliver the same service. Why? Because all of that goes to the bottom line, drives productivity. Now, there are many ways to solve those outcomes, but the reality is today that you're not going to, all the things you've done in the past, Lean and Six Sigma, are not going to be good enough to get you to driving great productivity to drive those outcomes. And the best executives we see who are selling the C-suite and the board are showing that to deliver an outcome, I can deliver, 3% less fuel if I do this, if I take this information and I in real time control these systems in this way, I'm going to get a 2 to 3 to 4% efficiency out of this system. Now, these outcomes are hard. It requires you to put yourself out there and make sure you have the depth of knowledge and the domain to do that. But if you start with looking at that and you start to go into, a business and say, we think we can save 2 to 3%, which doesn't sound like a lot, but if you said that all goes to the bottom line and you said I can generate 2% more, cost out to the bottom line, who doesn't want that? Or if I can generate 2 to 3% more efficiency in what I can generate out of a wind turbine, that's all to the bottom line. So when you think about those things, I think we've got to move to an outcome-based focus for digital. It's not I just got to put an ERP, because no one really knows what the benefit of an ERP. You can't quantify it. You just need it. But these systems, and when we talk about digital, quantified outcomes, focusing on the big outcomes, showing which information and what kind of analytics can be game-changing, and making that investment, that's the ones we see get bought every time in every business. And those are where the CEO of the company goes, I'm all in on digital. Why? Because they know exactly why they're doing it. And what they've struggled with traditional IT is what's the benefit of faster networks? What's the benefit of a bigger ERP? Where this is all about outcomes that you can measure and deliver to your business and talk about how you're changing your business.
Excellent. Well, Bill Rue, thank you so much for joining us on the Forum on World Class IT and sharing your perspectives. It's been a great conversation.
It's been a great conversation. I appreciate the time.
Excellent.
If you like what you've heard, we'd be grateful if you'd rate us on iTunes or through whatever other source you use for podcasts. And please join me next week when my guest will be Mayank Prakash, the Chief Digital and Information Officer for the Department of Works and Pensions, and someone who's been rated the most influential person in UK IT.
You've just listened to a podcast in a series we call Meta Strategies Forum on World Class IT. If you like what you've heard, please consider reading my book, World Class IT, Why Businesses Succeed When IT Triumphs, published by Josie Bass, a division of Wiley Press, in December of 2009. Both the book and the forum on World Class IT offer stories from a wide range of top IT leaders relating to Meta Strategies' five principles of World Class IT. The five principles are as follows. Principle one is people, and it's really the foundational principle. Without the right people doing the right jobs at the right time, it'll be nearly impossible to achieve excellent performance. The second principle is infrastructure. We like to say that this is the principle that separates proactive organizations from reactive ones. If infrastructure is not reliably performing its tasks, the IT organization will become stuck in reactive mode, consistently fighting fires. If systems and hardware and networks and so on work reliably, then a larger portion of the organization can think about the future. The third principle is project and portfolio management. This is the engine through which new capabilities can be brought to bear on behalf of the company. It is important to ensure that projects are delivered on time, on budget, and on target, and that the portfolio collectively supports the objectives of the business. The fourth principle is IT and business partnerships. It's important that, first and foremost, the different parts of IT, from business analysis to development and QA, through to support and all other aspects of IT, communicate effectively and efficiently. It's equally important, then, that IT develop a partnering relationship with the business that it is a part of. If the three prior principles are done well, then IT should earn a place at the strategy setting table, driving different parts of the business strategy. The fifth and last principle is external partnerships. Outsourcing is becoming a crucial weapon that organizations are employing, and managing these relationships to ensure that value is achieved is critical. In the fourth principle, the organization has learned and contributed to the discussion about what is strategic and what is not. Once that's clear, then it will be easier to determine which aspects of IT might be better managed by external partners or vendors. For more information on these five principles and the sub-principles that are associated with each, please visit our website at www.metastrategy.com, and please share your thoughts and comments by contacting us at feedback@metastrategy.com. And our theme music was written by David Armin. I'm Peter High. Thanks for listening.